day, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. The technologies we need to create a carbon-free world are all around us. That's what many advocates and scientists and policymakers are saying. They imagine an America where solar is on every rooftop, EV cars are in every garage, and wind turbines are spinning beyond the beaches of our shores. But this last piece of technology, these wind turbines, are something that we sometimes overlook, either because some people find them unattractive or because of their imposing size and upfront costs. Still, harnessing wind energy will be critical to bringing our carbon outputs down to zero. We really do need all hands on deck. We need to be leaning into lots of different ways of generating power in order to get away from the carbon sources. That's where we want to start the conversation today, with this idea of wind turbines and the role that they play and might play in reducing our carbon footprint. And we've got a great guest to help us think this through. Rob Gramlich is the founder and president of Grid Strategies LLC. It's a power sector consulting firm that works to transition clean energy onto our electrical grids. Rob Gramlich, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thank you, Stephen. Great to be here.
So tell us about wind turbines. How do they work? And how effective are they at producing energy? And not just any kind of energy, how effective are they at producing the scale and, breadth of energy that we need in our modern lives?
Yes, well, very effective, and scale is the key word. The great thing about wind, which is also true for solar and batteries, is that the costs have come down by about 90% over the last decade. So where it used to be a decade ago, wind and solar played a small niche role in the power system, I think every single utility in the country now is at least seriously exploring, but in almost all cases, rapidly developing their wind and solar programs, and usually doing them in combination. Some places are better suited to wind, some places to solar, but almost all of them are really doing both.
Hmm. So what about the problems with wind energy, the storage issue that I've heard some about, and the fact that, I don't know, you just can't always count on it being windy outside? How reliable can this power source actually be?
Yes, well, a very reliable part of a power system. The thing people don't generally understand about how our electric power system works is that there is this whole bulk power system that's connected across most of the country. So you really should think of it like an ocean, or let's say a Great Lake, where you pour a bucket of water in and somebody else takes a bucket of water out, and the overall level of the lake, say, stays constant. So the power system operators keep that level of supply and demand constant. And if the wind is blowing in Iowa, or it's blowing in Indiana or Ohio or Michigan, you know, it's almost always blowing somewhere. And so you can get to very high penetrations of wind, and then you add solar and you do them together, and of course they operate at different times. Now you're talking about getting 2/3 of your energy from renewable sources, and then you need to start adding quite a bit of storage and transmission to make that system work. But you really have to look at it as a portfolio, and usually have some natural gas for backup when nothing's blowing or shining anywhere.
So I remember really clearly former Governor Jennifer Granholm talking about the potential for wind energy here in the state of Michigan in particular. She was really enthusiastic about the idea that particularly in the northern parts of the Lower Peninsula, the conditions were really good, she thought, for large-scale experimentation with wind energy. Now, when I drive north, I certainly notice more turbines now than I did, 5 or 10 years ago. And in some places, it seems as though we really are pushing forward with the idea of scale, right? With the idea of trying to get some scale going with wind energy. But catch us up on where we actually are here in the state of Michigan and how aggressively we have harnessed this idea and whether it's paying the kind of dividends that we would expect.
Yeah, well, it's been quite impressive. I'm now watching from afar, but I grew up in southeastern Michigan listening to 101.9, and I remember Jennifer Granholm as governor saying those things. I know she was particularly interested in manufacturing jobs that come along with renewable energy and new clean energy sectors. And I think the latest is that there's 27 manufacturing facilities producing turbines, blades, and other different components of wind turbines in the state, which is great. There's 3,000 megawatts. So if you think about a typical wind farm being, say, 100 megawatts, that's a pretty big wind farm, then you get to 3,000. There's sort of 30 of those large wind farms, or maybe 50 of somewhat smaller size around the state. Now, it's the thing about wind is it's not usually where you not usually close to population centers. So most people don't see it on a daily basis, until you drive north in the summer or something like that. It's kind of they're sort of concentrated in Michigan in the thumb, and then in kind of right smack dab in the middle of the Lower Peninsula, there's a bunch of wind farms there. So that tends to be what happens. The average wind speeds tend to be higher in some of these more remote places, and obviously the land is a lot cheaper. You need to get a lease. If you're a wind farm developer, you need to get a lease with a farmer, usually, to put the wind turbines on their land. And, they're usually happy to have it. Not everybody, but usually enough people are welcoming of having a wind project that there's plenty of places. The states are big, the country's big, there's lots of places to put wind farms.
Yeah. So give us also a sense of how Michigan compares to other states and other places that we should be looking. I recently drove from northern Illinois down into Missouri through St. Louis, and I was really impressed by the number of turbines I passed and the number of turbine farms. Very, very large expanses that were just turbines, and it reminded me that maybe there are other places in the country that have more wind and are more, again, more enthusiastic than we have been about this technology.
Yeah, well, that's certainly true. There are places. I mean, interestingly, places like Texas and Iowa are the leaders in wind nationally. And you think about the politics of those states. It's not driven by a green agenda or the power of the environmental community in Iowa or Texas. It is really driven by the economics. And again, certain places have very strong average wind speeds and, low cost land and, farmers and ranchers who welcome it on their properties. But most states have pockets of their geography. Michigan has those locations I mentioned. New York is looking at a lot of wind development in the upstate part of the state, and they're building new transmission lines along railways down into the city. So there's a lot of that sort of development around the country, and it is interesting when you get on the interstate highways and drive around the country, you see a lot. In particular, nationally, you can think about this on a national scale. Almost 90% of our wind energy capacity is in the 15 states between the Mississippi River and the Rockies. You think about those, Great Plains states, Nebraska, Montana, out there in the upper and lower Great Plains. It's just massive wind power capacity, and so they're developing the transmission lines to deliver that to the coasts, to, you know, back and forth. And that does two things. One, you access some super cheap power that this nation is blessed to possess, but you also enable the power to move back and forth, going back to that big lake analogy. You know, the wind's always blowing somewhere, and it's blowing in Michigan, it may not be in Montana, and vice versa. So you get that that diversity, that geographic diversity that the power system planners love. There are certain states that are just always going to do better because of their natural resource than other states. But I think there are a lot of states like Michigan that have quite a lot of room to grow, and the state certainly could do more.
Yeah. I'm talking with Rob Gramlich. He is the founder and president of Grid Strategies, LLC, a power sector consulting firm that tries to usher clean energy onto electrical grids. Right now, we're talking about wind power, turbines, massive turbines that maybe you see in some places here in Michigan. We're talking about the potential for that wind power. How much can we generate? How much could it displace of the carbon fueled energy that we rely on, and how could we be more aggressive about the idea of embracing more of this wind technology to produce energy? I want to hear from you during the conversation as well. Give us a call and let us know about your optimism when it comes to wind energy. What do you make of our use of wind energy here in Michigan? Do you think it needs to be ramped up here in our state in rural areas, or maybe along the shores of the Great Lakes, which is a really great place for wind turbines? What do you imagine to be important renewable energy sources for our future? Also give us a call and let us know if you are not buying any of this, if you don't buy into at all the idea that alternative energy sources are an effective way to reduce our carbon footprint. Are you worried about cost? Are you worried about essentially duplicating the energy generation that we have now? In other words, not sacrificing usage in order to switch sources? Give us a call and let us know what you think the answers are then to stopping the planet from warming the way it is. As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page and put comments there, or you can go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation that way. Rob, we had a caller who couldn't stay on the line who asks whether we are considering bird migration when we put these wind turbines in. And I guess I would even broaden that question. I mean, these are very large structures. They do disrupt wind patterns to some degree, I would imagine, if you have a lot of them in one place. But they also would disrupt all kinds of natural environments for wildlife. How concerned should we be about those things? And when we are building these turbines or these turbine farms, is that something that they're thinking about?
Stephen, it's really not an issue, it turns out. Now, certainly, we need to study that both on a sort of a general scale about wind energy development in the United States, and also on a very local scale in terms of what impacts might there be in a particular location with a particular, you know, wildlife and other environmental issues that may be present at a particular spot where somebody wants to develop a wind farm. And we can be comfortable that those studies are done. They have to be done. And, you know, you need permits. And there's a whole set of biologists and ornithologists that work on these individual as well as macro scale studies. But there's really been no population wide impacts. The actual collisions with wind turbines are incidental and random, and not anything different than any building experiences with birds. And so it really hasn't been an issue. The only place where it's been an issue is in certain sage grouse type areas where those little birds don't like big tall things because they think there's going to be a raptor sitting on it. So if they're they want to be nesting in a certain area, they don't like the tall thing right next to it. So that's the type of thing that still needs to be studied and worked around. And right now there's a lot, the developers and the conservation groups are well aware of that issue and they work around it and move the wind farms to appropriate places. But there's not really any bird issue with wind as as a national issue. There's plenty of places to put them that are entirely safe.
Yeah. No, I'm glad you provided that information because that's a question that I think an awful lot of people have on their minds. All right, let's go to Greg in Detroit. Greg, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Good morning. Yeah, I love this discussion, and I own an EV. I love it. Absolutely love it. We'll never go back to a gas car. When I plug it in at home, I'm plugging in about a 90 kilowatt hour battery. Now, of course, that does not go back into the grid. I'm just taking electricity. But when you talk about the need for storage, do you see a scenario where hundreds of thousands of EVs plugged in various cities various times of the day can help supply that power at night when solar and wind aren't producing what they need to?
Great question, Greg. Appreciate the call. Rob, what's the answer?
Yeah, Greg, no, excellent question. And I love that you're thinking that way. I encourage everybody to think about our power system that way, because absolutely there's a massive opportunity to shift our consumption around, particularly with our new sources of consumption like electric vehicles, which I really expect are going to grow because, like you, Greg, I drive electric now and I will never go back. It's just such a better car. So if we can just, charge those cars in some way that's responsive to what the grid needs, going back to that lake analogy of, somebody putting a bucket of water in the lake and somebody taking it out, you certainly can have times when there's a ton of wind and solar being produced even at the same time. You're putting a bunch in raising the water level on that lake, and you want to have people then at that time consuming a lot. And you can charge your car if there was some signal or mechanism, and there certainly these do exist with utilities, to have people charge their batteries at that point. That would be great. Also, think about your air conditioning in the summer. You can, in the middle of the day when the sun's shining really bright, you can actually cool your house down an extra bit, let's say 2 degrees, so you don't really notice it much, but you can actually sort of store that cool air in your house, and then into the evening you would have less of a air conditioning cooling load because your house is already, a couple degrees cooler than it would otherwise be. So when the sun is setting or lower and you're getting less solar output, your house is still comfortable. So if we can think more about shifting loads, we really can help integrate a whole lot more clean generation like wind and solar.
Greg, I really appreciate the call and the really provocative question there about wind power. Thanks so much for being part of the program. Let's go next to Jim in Benzie County near Traverse City. Jim, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. It's
Hi.
Great to be on, and it's great to have hear Rob on here. I'm a former power engineer, worked in the utility world, and very interested in the high voltage DC macro grid. I know Rob's been working on that, and I'm wondering if he could talk about some of the benefits of having a macro grid overlay around the country.
Great question, Rob.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. I am excited about that too. It's not gotten a lot of attention yet nationally, but I I just think the economics and the physics lead us towards that ultimately, because high voltage DC transmission, direct current, it sounds like Jim understands, is a really cheap way to deliver power very long distances. And we have a lot of opportunities to use corridors like rail corridors and highway corridors to actually site these and route these lines. And the technology has improved so much that you really could think about a national scale grid, which, for example, could be heating Michigan homes in the evening from solar power in California. You think about where the sun is. I remember in Michigan, you know, you'd watching football on a Sunday night, the San Diego Chargers game was, you know, it was all sunny and we were freezing in Michigan. Well, you know, you think about how you could be powering Michigan from California solar in the evening, and then sending wind power back from Michigan and other Midwestern states to California when they need it, like in the early morning when the sun hasn't come up yet. There's an incredible amount of this sort of diversity. So if you put together the wind output, the solar output, and the load, the electricity consumption, you find all these opportunities to share power really efficiently. And if it's spread across everybody in terms of their electricity rate contributions to it, it really looks cost effective. So, you know, this needs more study. People need to think about it. It would change our institutions and industry quite a bit. But I think there are great opportunities to look at that.
Okay, Rob Gramlich, founder and president of Grid Strategies, LLC. It was really great to have you here with us to talk about the possibilities of wind power here in the state of Michigan and around the country. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Coming up, we are going to talk with the author, Ashley C. Ford, about her new memoir, Somebody's Daughter, and her upcoming appearance at the Midwest Literary Walk this weekend. Stay with us for more Detroit Today.